This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday 22nd of July 2016. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. The extracts we have for you this week have been edited by Liz and Gordon Legg. We'll begin with two or three regular notices, and the first one is that if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, then please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. 01962 870 370. And we'll give you that number again at the end of our recording. Just like to remind you that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. One more reminder for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. That's all lowercase, no spaces, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, the most recent first on the list. And so on to this week's edition of the Chronicle. Our readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
And standing in for Richard Martin, we have Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And Jerry Tuff.
Hello.
I'm your presenter this week, Ros Lydiard. And on to the news. The leading headlines this week are fierce debate over housing, pleas for a review, catching some rays as the summer sun finally shows up. And we'll have that first headline, Claire, please.
Fierce debate over housing. Residents and developers have been arguing their case over the Winchester District local plan. The plan will steer development over the next 20 years and is a vital tool for the City Council. A planning inspector has been holding an examination in public and was due to hear from more than 100 witnesses, ranging from developers, architects, business groups, charities, parish councils, and faith groups. Sessions were set aside for evidence from Winchester, Alsford, Bishops Waltham, Swanmore, Colden Common and Wickham. The County Council argues its plan for homes, including 2,000 at Barton Farm, mean that other proposals such as Pitt Farm are not needed. On Monday, Alsford residents voiced their concern at plans for a roundabout on the A31. The plans would allow access to the proposed 300-home Sun Lane development in Alsford. At the Local Plan Part 2 examination meeting on Monday, residents said they were concerned for safety at the junction as the A31 attracts speeds of up to 60 miles an hour. Alan Greenwood of the Alsford Professional Group said this was the first he had heard of the plans. In my experience, said the former Hampshire County Council transport officer, I have never seen a roundabout located in such a quick area on a down slope. I'm amazed a roundabout can be built there. Mark Philcox, Highways Development Officer at Hampshire County Council, responded, We feel the roundabout will not affect the bypass function. Locals also criticised the council's decision to back plans for more than 300 homes at Sun Lane. Resident Robert Fowler said, 325 homes will become a town. It won't be part of New Alsford or Old Alsford, but will be Alsford New Town. It will be completely isolated. Putting that amount of housing on one site is absolutely crazy. This, in my opinion, does not make for a good social development. Chris Rees, speaking for Alfred Homes, who have submitted plans for a development next to Albury Park, said, "This is not a beauty contest, but 69% of people came through to support our scheme. This is a significant number." Alfred wants to build 60 homes on the land off the avenue owned by local farmer Rodney Morgan Giles. The application includes an extended public car park, open space and landscaping and internal access roads. The development, named Alderwood, includes 19 homes for the over 55s and 40% affordable housing, 24 homes. Wednesday was due to be the last day before the hearings close, and the inspector makes his decision on the plan.
Please, for a review. Winchester City Councillors have again called on the ruling Conservative group to review the multi-million pound station approach scheme. They say their concerns have still not been addressed as they questioned the development team at the Overview and Scrutiny Committee on Monday. This comes less than a month after the same committee called for the entire process to be restarted as they believed the design competition was flawed. On Friday, Cabinet voted to pledge £1.2 million to progress the scheme to the next phase. This decision was due to be debated at full council last night after the Chronicle went to press. The Cabinet also voted to appoint Bidder B, believed to be Hopkins Architects from London, as the designer. These decisions were cross-examined by the committee, who questioned the sum of money that would be needed. Councillor Kim Gottlieb, who challenged the council over the now defunct £150 million Silver Hill scheme, said, "I am concerned that we are putting forward a lot of money to progress the scheme to see if it goes anywhere. That's a lot of money. There is no way anyone here would do that if it was their own money." He added, "I'm particularly concerned that we are stuck with Scheme B. Changing the curtains is not going to improve things. It's a scheme that we reject that was rejected by the design jury, the City of Winchester Trust and many residents. Why are we then still pursuing this?" In response, Council Leader Stephen Godfrey said the scheme was in prime position to receive £7.7 million from London Enterprise Partnerships, LEP. "We need to show LEP that we are serious about this project. Otherwise, our position in the standings will drop and we may not get it." Councillor Godfrey added, "They want to see shovel-ready projects with serious commitments. Pledging the £1.2 million and taking the scheme forwards shows them that we are. We have a development that will keep this city as a business city rather than a residential city." The Cabinet also heard that more than 1,000 jobs could be created and that £30 million a year injected into the local economy through the scheme. This was the claim from Bob Turner, Associate Director of Grant Thornton, who calculated the economic benefits. He said around 500 workers would be needed for the construction and around 500 more would be created by the shops and offices. "This data is based on the assumption at this early stage," he said. "It's been gathered from information that we have from similar developments." However, Michael Carden, Vice Chairman of the City of Winchester Trust, called for the scheme to be halted. A judicial review now would be a great deal safer than ploughing ahead with a flawed process that is almost bound to lead to further and greater problems. Nevertheless, others are backing the proposals, saying they are in need of more office space. Paul Marsland, partner at Lane, Clark and Peacock, who have had premises in the city for 25 years, said, "We love being in the city but need more space. We want to keep growing, but lack of available space in Winchester is making it harder to want to stay here. We may be forced to move. Time is of the essence, and I think we need to go ahead with the scheme." Plans for the cattle market look set to be postponed for 18 months to allow the council to concentrate on the Carfax site.
Catching some rays as the summer sun finally shows up. Summer has finally arrived as a mini heat wave hit Hampshire. Temperatures soared in Winchester, hitting 29 degrees on Monday and 31 degrees on Tuesday. Businesses selling cold treats were thankful for the weather, which until this week has been disappointing. Ice cream vendor Terry Shanahan said, "It was very good on Monday, but it was a bit slower yesterday. Maybe the sun has kept people out of town." "It has been a very poor summer, but this week has been busy and we need it to continue to get back on track." He said during June, the colder weather meant he was only working up to 3 days a week instead of six. At Flat White's Coffee Van, which sells various refreshments, hot and cold, co-owner Gail Monaghan said, "We kept running out of ice, and we've gone through a few bags already today." One motorist who was stuck in traffic after a crash on the M3 near Mitchell-Dever decided to sunbathe on the hard shoulder, prompting a police safety warning.
And we have the death announcements for you now, and I'll begin with the first one. Blackburn, Elsie Blackburn, after a short illness, passed away on the 13th of July, aged 89.
Gillam, Irene Gillam, on 5th July, aged 97.
Gordon, Dorothy Dot Gordon, MBE, ex-Fleet Chief, WRNS, peacefully at home on the 11th of July.
Hogg, Ruth Hogg, peacefully on 15th of July, aged 92.
Pickard, William Henry, Bill Pickard, sadly passed away on the 13th of July, aged 83.
Wesley, Matilda, Tilly Wesley, passed away peacefully on 15th July after enduring a difficult illness, aged 95.
Thank you for those, and is now on to Christian Comment, which this week is contributed by the Reverend Graham Bowcutt. Thank you, Claire.
He has headed his comment today, "The light shines brightest in the dark." If I'm honest, I do not want to write about this again, but the world seems to have gone mad, and to ignore it would be complacent. Seemingly everywhere you look, people are killing, murdering, displacing and persecuting. Geopolitical tension has never been more fractious. Insurgency, separatism, war and hate everywhere you look. There are few answers. As I write, France has suffered another attack. Last week, innocent black men and innocent policemen were shot in America. This morning, Turkey has had an attempted coup. Every day, continuing conflict in Afghanistan and Iraq, and places such as Ramadi, Aleppo, Palmyra, Fallujah, Mosul, Maghreb, Libya, Latakia, Kanasir, to name a few, creates great destruction and sadness. Across the world, in excess of 60 million souls are fleeing violence and persecution. Common sense tells us that there is no common ideological reason. Perhaps this is the problem. However, examples of the inability of human beings to love and get along with each other, our skill and appetite to hate and persecute, are easy to find. Humanity seems to think it is entitled to something, anything, a viewpoint, a resource, a place, an idea, a position, a status, a salvation. We dress up retribution as justice, denial as exhaustion, killing as protection, and ignorance as justification, rationalized each depending on your cultural viewpoint. And let us not think this does not apply to us here in the United Kingdom. We exist in a pretty precarious historic position of moral superiority, even in our recent history. If in doubt, read Chilcot. Humanity squabbles. This is an evident truth. Anything different from us becomes an excuse to exclude. It is wearisome and it is shameful. And yet it is not an ultimate truth. Humanity, with all its skill in killing and destruction, will not and cannot dim the light of Christ. In fact, I tell you now that indeed the light shines the brightest in the dark. Right at the beginning of the Gospel of St. John, verse 5, there are these amazing words: "The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it." It refers to the light as Christ, that very significant cultural, historical, theological event and truth. I often remind myself of these words when, just as at this moment, it seems evil is wherever you look. Christ is the light in the hands of those bringing relief to those who suffer war and poverty. Jesus is the light shining in those who give time, money, resources, and love to their fellow human beings in need. The light of Christ is in the very souls of those who weep and pray for their brothers and sisters, wherever, whoever they are. This is not a high ideal. This is the ultimate truth, and it is what Jesus is telling us in Matthew 5, the Sermon on the Mount, the singularly most astonishing piece of theology ever to have been recorded. If you do nothing else today, pray for peace, pray for your brother and sister, pray for love. And that was written by Reverend Graham Bowkett, who is the rector of the Upper Itchen Benefice and Area Dean of Alsford.
Thank you, Claire. And we're going to move on to letters today, and we have 15 for you. And rather than covering Silver Hill, we're still looking at that referendum, which seems to be inviting impassioned opinions on all sides. And Peter can begin, please.
Yes, the first one is written by James Anderson, and it's headed "Energy from Brexit." Sir, recent letters in this newspaper have reflected the debate on whether a referendum trumps Parliament or Parliament trumps a referendum. Perhaps those urging our MP Steve Bryan to vote with the local majority are also hoping that Labour MPs will vote against their electorates and refuse Article 50. If so, such a two-faced approach would surely be evidence of a corrupt ethos. Of greater interest here is the position of the Labour Party, which has been solidly Remain, while their electorate have been the dominant factor in Leave. The thesis that Labour voters are like sheep and that it was just a weak sheep dog to blame is a monumental arrogance, with the Labour Party embroiled in civil war between two camps that are both solidly Remain, while their traditional voters look elsewhere for leadership on Leave. The party appears to have learnt nothing. While our ballot papers had the words Remain and Leave, in truth the vote was between do nothing and do something. I understand how younger voters, who know only life under the EU regime, would be concerned by what is to them an unknown. On the other hand, one might also be concerned that on this issue, at least, the majority of our younger voters appear to prefer do nothing to do something. To those continuing to claim that the UK will go down the pan, I say this: well, why are you still here, when there's a land of milk and honey just across La Manche and a lot less crowded? For good or bad, the referendum result has at least energised the country. Thank goodness. And that was written by James Anderson, right close South Wanston.
Another Brexit letter from Roger Mallin, taking, I think, a rather different view. I admit to being on the Remain side, but did not realise the developing ramifications of leaving the EU. My reasons for staying were caution and my children's future. I've since listened to some of the idiotic reasons people gave for leaving. Many were born out of ignorance or just plain stupidity, given the magnitude of the issue. It was certainly no place for petty protest vote, which is how many of my age, that is over 70s, considered it. And many would now vote differently. If there was ever a case to be made for an IQ test before being eligible to vote, this was it. The issue of immigration has not been resolved and could have been made worse. The argument also stirred up the discriminating cretins amongst us. Hopefully their single brain cells will soon forget. This issue was treated like that of the German Jews in the 1930s and our West Indians in the 1950s and 60s. Fear. As to the financial implications, it looks likely that they will have long-lasting effects on the pensions of the geriatric out voters. Oh dear, it looks as though they have a Pyrrhic victory. We have shown the bureaucrats of the EU that the majority of us are not happy with their desire to create a federalist Europe, and they do not appear to be very happy. But that's their own fault for not listening to the ordinary man's concerns. Perhaps this sharp jolt might pop their bubble of self-gratification and ideology, so getting them back to the primary objectives which we originally accepted. Now that Messrs. Johnson and Farage have abandoned the ship, Gove has been shown to be a devious opportunist, and the rest of the out-group appear to be keeping their heads well below the parapet, is it not time that the MPs we voted in acted in a responsible manner by using their perceived greater intelligence to vote to stay in the EU when it comes before the House? After all, they will have that elusive benefit. Hindsight. Roger Mallin, Goring Field, Winchester.
Thank you, Jerry. This letter from Justin Kay has been headed "Vote Will Harm UK." Observant Winchester voters will have noticed their MP Steve Brine behind Theresa May last week as she was confirmed as Britain's new Prime Minister. Like Mrs. May, Brine was a Remain supporter and in the recent referendum and has said that despite this, he will follow the will of the British people and make Brexit a reality. The vote, he says, was the biggest exercise in democracy this country has seen for more than 20 years. It was also an example of direct democracy with you, the voters, in charge. That may be, but I would argue that an MP also has an obligation to listen to his conscience and exercise basic common sense. Many of the voters who supported Leave acted against their own interests and those of their and our children. They did so because they believed the many lies promulgated by the Leave campaign about everything from imminent Turkish EU membership to claims that the EU costs the UK £350 million a week and that this money will be magically instead find itself going to the NHS. When the scale of these lies start to become apparent, as they will, and when people's jobs, salaries and pensions start to suffer, as they will, and when Scotland leaves the UK, as it well may, people will ask, why didn't MPs act to prevent all this happening? Why did they blindly implement decisions which harmed the country and its people? Especially if these MPs know, and as I suspect Brian does, the long-term damage that this will cause to the country and its people. By willingly colluding in this travesty of democracy, MPs like Brian are abrogating both their conscience and common sense. Brian, who neglected to answer my questions directly in correspondence, may think his approach to Brexit will endear him to his Tory colleagues. However, it won't impress the majority of his constituents who voted overwhelmingly to remain and who will watch in dismay as all the warnings made by such people as Bank of England Governor Mark Carney materialise. Justin Kay, Chapel Lane, Otterbourne, Winchester.
Adam Nicholas writes, Politics of Hate. Sir, I'm glad to see that Mr. Treadwell's week is made worthwhile by John Airey's letters, Chronicle, July 14th. Brexit is all about the politics of hate. The problem is that the likes of Nigel Farage, Boris Johnson, and correspondents like Mr. Airey, is that they have created a huge political vacuum, which has been filled with complete and utter mediocrity. They all said what they didn't want. But just like Iraq and Afghanistan, they never thought about the exit strategy. We certainly haven't been offered one. We have no trade deals in place. We now have a buffoon as Foreign Secretary who's quite happy to bring down David Cameron, but not brave enough to take his place, not prepared to stand up and be counted. Nice could easily have been Blackpool's Golden Mile, only with unarmed police. Labour is in an even worse state than when Jim Callaghan was at the helm, unelected. I find it hard to find anything positive about the current government, also unelected. Mr. Treadwell observes that Mr. Airey leans to the right. Well, the odd yacht that leaned to the right was not really a problem when I was skippering trawlers, but a fully loaded supertanker, well and truly capsized on its starboard side, is a whole different ball game. Mr. Treadwell could try phoning the Samaritans. That's written by Adam Nicholas, Paintersfield, St Cross, Winchester.
Now we have one from Councillor Eileen Berry. I thought, having listened to some really insulting comments that are coming on social media from the younger generation, trying to intimidate other young people, and unfortunately also the elderly, for their decision in the way they voted in the recent referendum, it was time that we just put things in the right perspective. You cannot just call 17.5 million people chavs and degenerates, uneducated, and any other form of insult that is coming through all kinds of media. I also think that you see the young people, or indeed any people, coming out on the streets with their banners, which coincided, by the way, with the 100 years anniversary of the Battle of the Somme. Having been to the Western Front myself and having walked through the cemeteries containing thousands of young men who died, their ages as young as 17, you can see the complete youth of a generation wiped out. Well, that's just the First World War. Then we come to the Second World War, which I was part of by way of my childhood, frightened every time the sirens went off and being rationed to one egg a week and mostly spam to eat, no sweets and no chocolate, hardly any fruit. All of the young people that I speak of gave their lives so that today's young people are free to go to the street and say what they're saying and doing, and no one is there to stop them. And the aggressive language that is used against people that disagree with them is tolerated. Just a thought that I think ought to be brought to the forefront. There needs to be more tolerance and more awareness of how lucky we are in this country to be able to demonstrate on all levels. It's called freedom, and all those people we speak about who died, fought for our freedom. Councillor Eileen Berry, Prizedean Road, Hairstock.
This letter from Max Leggett is headed Defence of Attack. I have a confession to make. I cannot drive. This is what has led me to write a defence of Tom Wyman after his recent savage attack on Alsford, Chronicle June the 30th. You may have seen Dr. Wyman's article in the New York Times about Tom's views on Alsford and its residents, and it is fair to say the reaction has been alarming. You only have to look at the Australian Telegraph to see what our overseas friends are saying about us. Indeed, his own father has had to defend him from these trolls. Some ignorant commentators have asked why Tom made judgment on Hampshire's vote to leave the EU, incorrectly as it turns out, when he didn't even vote himself. As I'm sure you are aware, there was an electrical storm the day before the referendum, causing significant problems on the London-Liverpool Street to Wivenhoe line, meaning Dr. Wyman could not get to the Essex polling station in time. It is often said that not everyone can register for a postal vote, and as I previously mentioned, Tom and myself must rely on public transport. In some ways we are trapped, by society, circumstance, and the lack of a driving licence. In the end, I had no choice but to move to London, whilst Tom, who's 27, must trust Stagecoach's ever-dwindling Alsford-Winchester service. Not ideal. It is important to note that Tom's vitriol is not reserved for Alsford alone. Colchester, Dr. Wyman said, quite rightly seems shabby, ugly, and like there's nothing really there. Far too often people are scared to speak their mind in the fear of offending others. But thankfully this means little to Tom. His views on it all? It was worth it. Max Leggett, Orchard Close, Alsford.
Debbie Harding's letter is headed Shock Decision. Sir, at the Winchester City Council Planning Committee meeting on June the 30th, Ward Councillor, Councillor Cook, read out an email she had received claiming it branded her as a traitor. No doubt your readers found this surprising. Chronicle, July the 7th. For over 3 years, residents and parish councillors have been working with the City Council on the local plan Part 2 for Coldon Common and have jointly settled on a site that will provide the required number of houses to be built, with at least one other site becoming available within the time frame, which should more be required. One particular developer, whose site was not chosen, has been bombarding the parish and city councils with demands for information that he claims shows the sites were wrongly chosen and cannot deliver the houses needed, despite him having been told repeatedly by the city council that they are satisfied that the site offers sufficient housing and open space. At the meeting on June the 30th, to the surprise of the parish, Councillor Cook chose to support that developer instead of the resident she was elected to serve, and despite having previously endorsed the preferred plan. She has stated that she is a friend of the owner of the site in question. It also became apparent during debate that the developer was proposing to build far in excess of the 21 houses he had initially proposed. While we cannot condone the intemperate nature of the email sent to her, we find Councillor Cook's actions ill-suited to her role in the community, and our confidence in her is severely damaged. That is written by Debbie Harding, who is the clerk of Coldon Common Parish Council.
And this letter goes back to Brexit and comes from Philip Ross. In contrast to other recent letters in this newspaper, I would like to commend the Winchester MP for setting aside his own views and stating publicly that he will support the vote of the British public in the recent referendum. I was surprised by the parochial attitude of some who seemed to consider that the vote was a local one, rather than the fact that the constituency was a convenient way of assembling a national vote, and wonder why this is happening. I'm sure that these people cannot consider that their wealth or imagined intellectual superiority somehow makes their votes more worthy of consideration, or could this just be party politics? I canvassed on behalf of and voted for Mr. Bryan at the last election and will do so again with confidence in his judgment. Philip Ross, Takedown Meads, Winchester.
John Foy has written a letter entitled Voting with Heads. In recent weeks, some of your correspondents seem to have decided the electorate's motives without knowing anything about them. Isn't it rather arrogant to imply that over 17 million people are stupid because they disagree with you? Were they really protest voting, didn't understand the question, for some unfathomable reason trying to ruin their children's future or taken in by politicians' lies? Isn't it possible that the majority of them, after careful consideration, voted as they did because they think that, in the long run, it will be better for the country? By all means disagree, but there is no need to belittle those who do not share your view. John Foy, Grovelands Road, Takedown, Winchester.
David Farthing, a previous chairman of Winchester Talking Newspapers and now representing Winchester Rotary, writes, "It's so helpful." That is S-E-W. "Sir, Winchester Rotary would like to thank many of your readers who, some years ago, in response to a letter which you kindly published, donated used tools and sewing machines for refurbishing by the charity Tools for Self-Reliance," that's TFSR, "and sending on to Africa. This need continues to be urgent. TFSR volunteers carry out refurbishment in their well-equipped workshops at Netley Marsh prior to dispatch to partner organisations in Africa. Most importantly, regular visits are made to provide business advice to artisans to ensure that African partners are working efficiently and that the refurbished tools are continuing to help artisans and trainees to earn a living. TFSR welcome donations of good quality sewing machines and tools for woodworking, metalworking, all building trades, shoe repairing and haberdashery materials for tailoring. Especially in demand are hand-driven round bobbin Singer sewing machines. Donations to assist with transport costs are also and always gratefully received. TFSR, for whom I am a registered collector, are one of the many worldwide charities supported by Rotary. If you think you may have tools or sewing machines suitable for refurbishment and sending to Africa, please call me on 01962 856038. That is 01962 856038. Or you can email me at davidfarthing123@btinternet.com. And that's written by David Farthing of Winchester Rotary.
Oh, J.B. McCoyd, who wrote our next letter, seems to think that some of our buses could perhaps be revamped or relegated to the unusable. He says, "Ever since last September, the 86 bus timetable, which includes the 85, to and from Overton every 2 hours, has caused endless confusion for people using it. This includes Andover Road North, Worthy Down, South Wanston, Sutton Scotney and Bullington. In general, reliability is poor. For example, Wednesday, July the 13th, buses were cancelled and broken down at 10 a.m. and 11 a.m., causing missed appointments at doctors and dentists. Many buses are far too old and very unfriendly for disabled people. And it's a very expensive service for young people. I've heard a huge number of complaints from a cross-section of people, as has the parish council at South Wanston. People at Mount Batten Court, off Andover Road, with walking aids, have had a particularly difficult time with these old buses. For example, the 10:20 a.m. bus on Friday, April the 15th. I've sent full details to Hampshire County Council Transport, but have heard nothing. The stagecoach service north of Winchester, which has no competition, is bad in comparison with its other services in and around Winchester. Their buses are inferior to other bus companies. We need a different bus company. It's as simple as that. J.B. McCoyd, Groves Close, South Wanston.
P.H. Dean has written this letter, entitled The Weedy City. I understand that Chicago is known as the Windy City, and there is no doubt that Winchester could certainly be called the Weedy City, for wherever one looks, there are weeds. They are in gutters, out of drains, and on nearly every traffic island. Some even sport bombsite buddleias and ragwort 4 feet tall. It is unfortunate that the Hampton Court Flower Show could not have been held at the end of this month. Some of our exhibits would certainly have gained a silver gilt. What has happened to civic pride? P.H. Dean, Oliver's Battery Crescent, Winchester.
Anne Gosling writes, thanks for support, sir. As Winchester and District Branch of Samaritans, our operating area extends beyond Winchester and includes Alsford. We were so pleased to meet Alsford residents when we were collecting on Saturday, July the 9th. We raised £413.80, which will be a big help in meeting our costs of providing the Samaritan service. Your support helps us to support others. That's from Anne Gosling, Treasurer, Winchester District Branch of Samaritans, Upper High Street, Winchester.
And here we are finally. Station approach, a shambles, says Jock MacDonald. Where there is no vision, the people perish. Old Testament, Proverbs 29, verse 18. Or in the New English Bible, where there is no one in authority, the people break loose. There's so much that's bad in the news that the wrecking of Winchester by a combination of career civil servants and incompetent, visionless councillors from outside the city hardly gets noticed. The people broke loose over Silver Hill. They need to break loose again before it's too late against the planned shambles for the station approach. Winchester is far too precious for these hideous blocks, built for no other reason than to raise revenues. Jock MacDonald, Stockbridge Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Thank you all very much for those. If you have an opinion and want to air it in the Hampshire Chronicle or break loose, as the last letter said, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. All lowercase, no spaces in this. news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we have the views of the people on the street. And this week, the Chronicle's roving reporter takes opinions on the government's renewal of Trident. What do they say, Claire?
Well, Paul Gerrard, who's 57, who's a train operator of Romsey Road, Winchester, said, I think we should, for the sake of our children. If we don't have it, but others do, then we are vulnerable. It may never happen, but it's good to know it's there. Michael Smith, who's 72 and retired, of Tegdown Meads, said, it is outdated. We do not use it as a sign of defence, but as a sign of attacking intent. It needs to go. Dan Cooper, who's 35 and a retail supervisor of Stanmore Lane, Winchester said, I would rather have it than not. I get that people say that say we don't need it, but when North Korea are threatening nuclear action, I feel safer knowing we have something to hit back with. And Mary Daniels, who's 25, she's a personal trainer of Main Road Littleton, and said, I think it is used as a scare tactic rather than anything else. We don't need it anymore. I would like to see it scrapped and the money put elsewhere.
And we're on to editorial comment now, which is headed City Council may be heading for disaster. And so we're back to the station approach issue. The item says, it does look as though the City Council could be sleepwalking to another disaster in its handling of station approach. The Conservative group is ignoring the views of organisations such as City of Winchester Trust and pressing on with the ambitious plans stroke monster proposals for the Station Hill area. In a leader of June the 9th, the Hampshire Chronicle said that this was a key moment for Winchester and repeat it here. Vital decisions are about to be taken. They are as important as the ones taken at the start of the millennium over Silver Hill that locked out any competition and shackled the fate of the scheme to Thornfield and ultimately THRE. And we all know how that ended. The calamity of those exclusivity decisions, made by the Liberal Democrats, by the way, only became apparent years later, although there were warnings at the time from the late Alan Weeks of the Winchester Residents Association and Labour City Councillor Patrick Davis. It had looked as if the council had learned lessons with the design competition. But the problem this time was to impose a brief that has resulted in Bidders B's huge scheme. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, but the ideas of Bidder B, better known as Hopkins Architects, look pretty dreary. On the plus side, it is sensible to delay the scheme for the cattle market. Joanna Lewis is making a plea for the hedgehog. Why is that, Jerry?
Because she's feeling guilty. She starts off by saying, I'm a home wrecker, dear reader, a no good heartbreaker. It was a late night encounter, and only the next day did I realise a young family was involved. I'm not proud of what happened. As one of the great icons and social commentators of the modern age, Cher, once lamented, if I could turn back time. It's some consolation, I suppose, that I won't be the last, and apparently there's an epidemic of it at this time of year. I refer to the Great Hedgehog Massacre at the bottom of my garden last Saturday night, an event that has challenged my cherished self-identity as an animal lover. So it was that Mr. Bibbs, Mini Dachshund number one, was thrilled to partially get a hedgehog into his chops. After separating him from the poor creature, it was released into a neighbour's dog-free garden using oven gloves. The next morning, Delilah, Dachshund number two, managed the same. Again, a small prickly ball was relocated. Unfortunately, late that afternoon, both dogs could be seen nosing a moving stickleback. Stupidly, I'd not checked for babies and had removed a mother. The two hoglets left after predation survived 12 hours, despite amazing round-the-clock care from the staff at Nettles Hedgehog Rescue. I was heartbroken. My ownership of dogs is part of a horrible phenomenon and depressing statistic. Hedgehogs are down to 2% of the population they were in 1945. We've lost a third in 10 years. A huge threat to their very survival comes from our beloved pets. As founder of the Colgan Common Hedgehog Conservation, Richard Pond writes, Dog attacks are devastating, as they kill the very source of a species on the horizon of extinction in Britain. Our West European variety of hedgehog, Erinaceus europaeus, is the UK's only spinal mammal. It has changed little in the last 15 million years, a bit like Donald Trump's brain. They are our favourite wild animal. They sport 6,000 cream and brown spines that hang loosely like an inverted rah-rah skirt, rolling themselves into a ball when threatened. They have a soft grey fur underbelly. And not dissimilar to the current Labour leadership contest, they communicate through a complex series of grunts. With a fabulous, versatile snout, being related to shrews, they have surprisingly long legs. When the moment takes them, they rise up and, whoa, they're off. However, sentimentality and a love of Mrs. Tiggywinkle aren't enough. People like me need to regularly check their gardens and closely watch our dogs, especially during the breeding season and always at night. Any netting, like football goals or cricket nets, needs to be folded away. Careless use of strimmers is a big problem too. But the main culprit is the relentless destruction of green spaces and gardens for development, killing the habitat they need. Access to lots of diverse gardens full of insect-friendly plants, not petunias. Every garden grab, every lost field to developers, spells death. Kindness kills too. Hedgehogs are often fed the wrong food, which makes their teeth and gums look like an addict's smile. Dry cat food and water are enough. Also, taking on the hugely specialist task of hand-rearing baby hoglets usually ends in tears. Last week, the People's Trust for Endangered Species and the British Hedgehog Preservation Society launched a petition calling on the government to give hedgehogs extra legal protection. All developers should be required to undertake checks with an independent observer. If hedgehogs are present, binding measures could be put in place, such as the maintenance of hedgehog-friendly habitats and highways. Sign this petition now or become part of Hedgehog Street, a campaign to ensure every neighbourhood has a local hedgehog monitor and advisor. And we can support our saintly local hedgehog rescuers. These volunteers work tirelessly, without official funding, to save the sweetest of casualties.
Thank you, Jerry. Joanna Lewis writes with such colourful clarity. She's a really entertaining writer. Thank you very much. And we go on to Westminster Diary now, which has two entries on the activities of Steve Brine and George Hollingbury. Claire has the first item, and then Peter on George Hollingbury, please. Thank you, Claire.
This is headed Pupils Visit MP at Westminster. Winchester MP Steve Brine took a break from the tumult of Westminster to welcome a party of Hairstock pupils on a visit to Westminster. The visit was organised by Parliament's Education Service, which teaches children about the role, processes and history of Parliament and find out how they can engage more actively in their democracy. Mr. Brine, who gave out certificates to all those who took part, met the group and then took part in a wide-ranging question and answer session. He said, "The Education Service is a fantastic tool we have in the House to teach youngsters more about what we do here, how government and Parliament works, and the processes of our democracy. I'm always thrilled to be able to come along to meet groups of my younger constituents and answer the questions they put forward. I see teaching young people about what we do as a very important part of my role and look forward to taking part in more sessions as this Parliament progresses. Best question from this session has to be, which Prime Minister out of David Cameron and Theresa May do you prefer? That one required a very diplomatic answer." Head teacher Jackie Sankey said, The children at Hairstock Primary were inspired by the tour, workshop, and indeed the session with Steve Brine. We were very proud of how the children thought of interesting questions to ask Steve, to develop their understanding of democracy further and the work of a Member of Parliament. To be able to secure a school's visit to the Houses of Parliament was amazing. The children gained so much from this trip, and we're already looking forward to planning next year's visit.
Six of the best are given government roles in PM Theresa May's reshuffle. Six Hampshire MPs have been handed government roles by the new Prime Minister. Meon Valley MP George Hollingbury has been reappointed right-hand man to Theresa May as she enters Downing Street, acting as her eyes and ears in Parliament. Caroline Noakes has been made Parliamentary Under-Secretary at the Department of Work and Pensions, while Winchester Steve Brine has been landed a role as Assistant Government Whip. Mr. Hollingbury described his appointment as Parliamentary Private Secretary as a huge honour. He said, "It will be a privilege for me to act as her eyes and ears in the Commons and to liaise with Downing Street, the Chief Whip and my Conservative MP colleagues on a broad range of issues as they arise. The job is going to be challenging and extremely interesting, and I'm absolutely certain I will have my hands full. But I thank the Prime Minister for the trust she has shown in me." Ms. Noakes, who represents Romsey and Southampton North, said, "Having previously been a Parliamentary Private Secretary in the Department of Work and Pensions, I look forward to being able to hit the ground running in my new role. I will, of course, continue to be just as available to my constituents while carrying out my additional duties in the department." It follows two more appointments from Hampshire at the Department of Work and Pensions. Penny Mordaunt for Portsmouth and East Hampshire's Damien Hines were both made ministers, while Gosport MP Caroline Dinage was moved from the Ministry of Justice to Education, retaining her role as Minister of Women Minister for Women and Equalities.
We're moving on to Belgarum now, that famous Hampshire Chronicle alternative view of the news. And we have three items this week. Jerry has the first for us, please.
Which is headed, "Politicians Can Do God Here." Tony Blair's spin doctor, Alistair Campbell, once famously said, "We don't do God," scotching a line of inquiry about the Prime Minister and religion. But Winchester politicians are different. Steve Brine's faith is no secret, and now Stephen Godfrey, leader of the City Council, has revealed his Christian values and how it affects his work. Writing in the local Roman Catholic magazine, Councillor Godfrey said the role reinforces the importance of listening to voters, councillors, and advisers. "But I am learning, or relearning, that I must listen to God as well. Christ did not speak about what council tax rates should be or if there should be a new leisure centre in Winchester. His message was much simpler, although it does seem to be very complicated to understand or live by, that we should love God and love one another. This starts with me listening to others, as God may be talking to me through them. So please feel free to contact me on any matter, and I will listen."
One stellar meeting. The to-do list when you return from space must be quite long, but Tim Peake eventually got around to a spot of shopping in Winchester. Britain's astronaut was spotted last Thursday by one of his biggest fans, six-year-old Luca Wilson. The youngster followed Tim's mission to the International Space Station at school and grabbed his chance to say hello. "They did a little fist bump," said Mum Sue. "He was sitting on the green with his family and we spotted him walking towards the town. So me and Luca thought we'd see if we could get a photo with him. He's been growing seeds in space at St. Bede Primary School. They've been following Tim Peake's progress, and they've been planting seeds for him. He's his absolute hero, so we couldn't miss the chance to get a photo. He was really friendly and very nice to us. Luca kept looking up at the sky, and when he was talking to him, he couldn't quite believe that he was back on the ground. Luca told the Chronicle it was awesome to meet his hero.
Science fun at Lion's Fate. Perhaps a first for Swanmore and its recent village fate. For the first time, the Mearn Valley Lions enjoyed the support of the Chaos Roadshow, an enthusiastic bunch of Cambridge University students who believe that science is fun and relevant to everyone. They certainly captured the imaginations of old and young alike. In and around their marquee, the student demonstrators conducted around 50 hands-on science experiments, providing a new dimension to the fete, alongside its more regular attractions, including classic cars and bikes, tombola stalls and coconut shy. The event was blessed with a sunny summer's day, which the Mearn Valley Lions Club has now organised for the last 12 years. Residents responded by turning out in their hundreds to show support, and families were able to enjoy the sunshine while listening to the fine music from local bands Contraband, Soberton Strummers, and the Swanmore College of Technology Jazz Band. It looks like the Lions Club will clear well in excess of £4,500 for their charity account as a result of income from all the fete's activities, which is a great result for a small village event. The Lions thank the locals for their support. Let's hope for similar success next year.
Thank you all for those. We're moving on to historical items with the usual mini news clip starting with 200 years ago. 200 years ago on July the 22nd, 1816, bottles of air stolen. A porter conveying a gasometer and a basket of 28 bottles of vital air from the pneumatic institution in Bond Street was robbed by a man near Story's Gate. On Thursday last, of the whole of his charge, the thief must doubtless have experienced no small disappointment on examining his booty, to find, instead of some intoxicating liquor, that the bottles were so well corked, apparently containing nothing. And the next item on this section, 200 years ago, is headed wrestling match. The Exeter Grand Wrestling competition commenced on the 8th, when the Herculean flower was thrown by the noted Jackman. But he had afterwards to wrestle with Matthews the younger, who held him out for more than three quarters of an hour, when neither being able to gain the mastery, it was decided that the prize should be equally divided. In consequence, however, of several serious accidents, the farther progress of the diversion was stopped by magisterial authority on the 11th. One man had a rib broken, another was disabled by a violent kick on the knee, and a third received a severe contusion to his shoulder.
100 years ago, July the 22nd, 1916, Somme advance. The left of the British battlefront, north of the Somme, is being brought into line with the right. After the capture of the village of Auvilliers, our troops pushed north on Monday night in spite of thick mist and rain and made substantial progress on a front of 1,000 yards. Several strongly defended posts were stormed and some prisoners and six machine guns were captured. Writing on Monday, the Times special correspondent at the front says that our advance from Bazantin-le-Petit Wood brought us within 1,500 yards of Pozières. Holiday plea. A special conference of representatives of the principal organised trades of the country was held on Tuesday at Caxton Hall under the chairmanship of Mr. A. Henderson, President of the Board of Education, to discuss the question of postponing holidays. A letter was read from General Sir Douglas Haig in which he appeals to the workers at home to surrender their 2 days' rest in August and points out that 2 days' cessation of work in the munitions factories must have the most serious effect on the operations now being carried out by the British Army in France.
50 years ago was July the 16th, 1966. The first item is headed Crisis in Steel. Now that we have the steel bill before us, it becomes clearer than ever that steel nationalisation is not only just irrelevant to our national needs, it is wrong, said Mr. David Price, MP, speaking at the annual meeting of the Eastleigh Division Conservative and Unionist Association at the Royal Hotel Southampton on Friday of last week. It brings home to us all the fact that Mr. Wilson's government are prepared to put party before country. This socialist dogmatism is having a damaging effect upon Sterling and upon our friends abroad who want to see the British economy in good health. Mr. Price said that the government had not yet produced any evidence that as a result of nationalisation, more, better or cheaper steel would be produced. The second item is headed High Street Plan. The barring of traffic throughout the full length of Alton High Street is one of the main proposals in the town policy map, details of which were announced at a press conference in Winchester on Tuesday. From Mount Pleasant to the top of Crown Hill, together with Market Street and the Square, the town centre will become a pedestrian shopping precinct if the plan, at present merely on a policy basis, is approved. While Alton Bypass from beyond Chawton to the other side of Hollybourne will divert through traffic, an internal bypass between the shops and the breweries will route vehicles around the actual town centre.
25 years ago, July the 19th, 1991. NHS unsafe. A leading Winchester consultant has said that the public should be told clearly that the health service is not safe in the hands of this administration. Mr. Paddy Ross was speaking at the British Medical Association conference in Inverness. It has been announced, meanwhile, that the Minister for Health, Mrs. Virginia Bottomley, is to visit Winchester to talk to GP fund holders and GPs interested in becoming fund holders in the future. The meeting next Friday in the Guildhall will be by invitation only, and it comes at a time when debate is raging over allegations by many doctors that the government's changes to the National Health Service are creating a two-tier system. And the second article, Observers Disbanded. The disbanding of the Royal Observer Corps has come as a bolt from the blue for members of No. 14 Group ROC, Winchester, and has been described as ridiculous by their commandant, Anthony Mears. Commander Mears said the government's decision announced last Wednesday came as a complete surprise. We were expecting some reduction, but not the complete stand down. I feel it is a very short-sighted policy, he said. The axing of the ROC, due to take place in September, comes as part of the government's overall reduction of Britain's civil defence capability, with the Cold War officially over and the reduced threat in Europe. The disbandment will save around £8 million a year.
Thank you very much. And that's the end of our weekly regular features. We'll take a look now at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. And in this glorious weather that we're experiencing just now, it's appropriate to start with the open gardens opportunities. On Thursday and Sunday, July the 28th and 31st, Tanglefoot, Crawley, Winchester. It's 5 acres on chalk. Highlights include a raised lily pond, herbaceous bed, herb, wheel and productive kitchen garden, and an adjacent area field is being converted into wildflower meadow. And if you've seen those, they really are glorious at the moment. Admission is £4 and you can go from 2 to 5:30 p.m. That's on the 28th and the 31st of July. Plants from the garden are for sale. That's Tanglefoot Crawley. And a garden showcase. Green-fingered residents of Stockbridge are showcasing their gardens for charity. About 11 residents will be inviting the public through their gates to look around their backyards in a bid to raise cash for St Peter's Church. The gardens on all the eastern side of Stockbridge will be open from 1:30 to 5:30 p.m. on Saturday, July the 30th and 31st. And meanwhile, Amesbury Town Band will perform on the church lawn and stalls will fill the church hall. So that's all on Saturday and Sunday, the 30th and 31st of July. Sounds like a lovely, truly English event. In Winchester Cathedral, there is a talk about William Walker on July the 27th. That's Wednesday, July the 27th at Winchester Cathedral. His work as a diver saved the cathedral foundations. It should be an interesting talk. It's a free entrance, but cathedral entries apply. Booking is requested to ensure sufficient guides are available. And the number to ring is 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. And if you have children, grandchildren, or even young friends, there's a lot at the moment going on in theatres and church halls and schools for entertainment. I'm just going to pick out two for you. The Discovery Centre in Winchester has something called the Little Howard's Big Show for Kids, and it's on Sunday the 31st at 11:30 a.m. That's the Discovery Centre, with a box office ticket number of 01962 873 603. Little Howard's Big Show for Kids. I wouldn't mind taking a young friend along to that myself. And at the Haymarket Basingstoke, it's High School Musical, and I know how popular that show is among young teenagers. It's High School Musical, Thursday to Saturday, July the 28th to the 30th, 7:30 and 2:30 on the Saturday. High School Musical at the Haymarket, Basingstoke. 01256 844 244. That box office number again. 01256 844 244. And one last item at Winchester Cathedral. It's the usual lunchtime concert, but this time Henry Bearley will be playing the organ. That's on Tuesday the 9th of August at 1 p.m. Winchester Cathedral, a free concert, but cathedral entries apply. I hope you can manage to get to one of those, particularly the gardens. Now, before we move on to the general news, the following are the lighting up times starting on Saturday the 23rd of July, when the sun will set at 9:04 p.m. And on Wednesday the 27th of July, the sun will rise at 5:24 a.m. and will set again at 8:59 p.m. And on to the items of general news. Peter, can we have your first article, please?
Yes, the heading is Accused Police Resign Before Investigations. More than half of police officers in Hampshire facing gross misconduct investigations in the last 2 years resigned or retired before their cases were heard, figures show. A total of 833 officers were added to the disapproved register by forces in England and Wales in the first 2 years, the College of Policing said. Of the 369 who left in the year between December 2014 and November 2015, 202 were dismissed, 147 resigned and 20 retired, while in the 12 months from December 2013, 215 were dismissed, 219 resigned and 30 retired. In Hampshire, of the 21 added to the disapproved register, 14 resigned, 1 retired and 6 were dismissed. The number of officers leaving before their cases were resolved, totalling 416 over the two-year period, comes despite government steps to bar them from doing so in an amendment to police regulations, which came into effect in January 2015, but did not apply to ongoing investigations. The majority of those who were placed on the register were reported by colleagues with internal complaints, the source of 91% of the cases in 2013-14 and 84% in 2014-15. The register was introduced to prevent officers from re-entering the service after being dismissed for misconduct or resigning or retiring while subject to gross misconduct investigations where there would have been a case to answer. College of Policing Standards Manager Detective Superintendent Ray Marley said, "There is a misconception that police do not report wrongdoing by colleagues, and this is clear evidence that they are confronting unacceptable behaviour."
Major Homes Scheme looks set for refusal. A major house building scheme on the edge of Winchester is set to be refused today. The plans for up to 350 homes by Linden Homes at Vale Farm off Romsey Road have been recommended for refusal by officers at the Planning Committee. The scheme also includes up to 140 affordable homes, an elderly care village, a mixed-use local centre and improvements to existing bridleways and new cycle links, open spaces, play areas and drainage works there would also be and there would also be an employment hub. The original plan indicated a roundabout from Romsey Road, which raised concerns about pedestrian safety from Hampshire County Council Highways Department. The amended proposal on the table shows there will be a signalised entrance from the road into the site, which will include a safe crossing route for pedestrians. Planners say the scheme should be refused as it does not fit into local plan policies. They say that the proposed housing is not the type which is acceptable in the countryside. Another reason is that the council can show they have an adequate supply of housing land, meaning there is no justification for them to release this site for housing. Among those objecting to the plans officially is the head of landscape, who said the development would be harmful to the setting of the city and rural character of the A3090 and the fields between Pitt and the edge of Winchester. The City of Winchester Trust strongly opposed the plan and say the amended scheme does not go far enough to alleviate traffic problems that it could cause, and the development on the Greenfield site will spoil the rural approach to the city. In a planning document, they state, "Building on such a Greenfield site, together with its associated traffic measures, would basically extend the city's settlement boundary and alter an important part of its character and setting." Chairman of the Policy Committee of the City of Winchester Trust, Patrick Davies, said, "It is outside the built-up area of Winchester and there is no need for it. It would breach the carefully done local plan. The danger is that all the fields around built-up Winchester, which are either owned by developers or for which developers have options for if a policy is breached." Hursley Parish Council also feel the scheme is unsuitable. They say the proposal is against the local plan and the development would double the population size of the village and be unsustainable. They also fear the congestion on Romsey Road, which they described as unacceptable in its current state. Other parish councils nearby have also objected, These include Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery. More than 468 letters have been written to planning chiefs to oppose the plan. There were 98 letters of support from people who feel Winchester needs more affordable housing to retain a social mix.
Families search for justice not resolved. A Hampshire family is still seeking justice after the tragic death of a dad of one who was struck by a car on the Caribbean island of St. Lucia. Winchester Coroner's Court heard how Quinton Garrathy was struck by a jeep which was travelling at least two times the speed limit on a 20-mile-per-hour road. Mr. Garrathy, 38, from Providence Park in Bassett, Southampton, worked as a senior cabin crew member for Virgin Atlantic and had just celebrated his first wedding anniversary and was enjoying being a father to his then 3-month-old daughter, Olivia Ray. Despite his death happening nearly 2 years ago, on August the 2nd, 2014, the inquest in St. Lucia has not been concluded after a series of adjournments. It is not known if the driver of the Hyundai SUV, Sebastian King, who is a son of the island's pathologist, Dr. Stephen King, will be prosecuted. The inquest heard how Mr. King, who was 18 at the time, had only passed his driving test a month before the incident, refused to be breathalysed voluntarily when asked, and suspicions have been raised in an inquest in St. Lucia that he may have been drinking. Mr. Garrathy, a former Peter Simmons College and Greg School student, was on the island having flown there in his work. He was staying at the Royal St. Lucia Resort in Rodney Bay and had been drinking in an evening out with other crew members. He'd left prematurely and took a minibus back to the hotel, but got out early at Rodney Bay Marina. The inquest heard he died of serious head injuries just moments after he got off the bus at 1:30 a.m. when the jeep driven by Mr. King struck him as he tried to cross the road. One witness claimed the car hit him at 80 miles per hour. Another said it struck Mr. Garrathy at 40 miles per hour. Mr. King said he was driving at 35 to 40 miles per hour and claimed he had been slowing down to 25 miles per hour when he passed the bus and struck Mr. Garrathy. Mr. King said, "I saw a man running across the road and into my vehicle. I tried to beat my horn, but it was too late." Mr. King stayed at the scene, and shortly after, his father and his lawyer arrived. Bus driver Cuthbert Gabrielle described Mr. Garrathy as drunk, but he did not witness the incident. Eyewitness Kelly St. Four said the jeep was approaching at speed. He said he saw the bus driver pointing out information to Mr. Garrathy, who then crossed the road and was flung up to 7 feet in the air when struck. Rodney Bay Marina's security officer, Rufus Augustine, said in a statement that he saw the jeep approaching at speed and shouted, "Do not cross! Do not cross!" to Mr. Garrathy, who ignored the advice. A toxicology test revealed he had consumed 3 times the legal drink drive limit, and one witness described him running across the road as he was struck. However, Coroner Graham Shaw did not accept that he ran. The inquest heard a statement from PC Isidore of St. Lucia Police, who said that he did not believe Mr. King was driving in a dangerous manner and put the blame on Mr. Garrathy's alcohol consumption. Senior coroner Graham Short recorded a verdict of death due to traffic road collision. He said that factors that may have caused the death were the bad light conditions, the bus obscuring the view of the jeep, and the victim speeding, and Mr. Garrathy misjudging distances due to consuming alcohol. But Mr. Short raised a suspicion that police may not have fully investigated the crash, as Mr. King is son of the pathologist. "I do not know if the driver of the jeep was intoxicated. He was not breathalyzed after the incident, and he says he did not consume alcohol, but there is a suspicion that he was drinking with his friends. Suspicion is also raised because he is the son of the local pathologist." Mrs. Garathy, Mr. Garathy's wife, said the fact that the driver was not breathalysed and he's taken a life is all very well, but they took a sample of my husband's blood, so why not his?
Alarm service is back after cuts to funding. More than 1,000 elderly Winchester, more than 1,000 elderly Winchester residents will be better protected after an alarm was resurrected. They will again benefit from a 24-hour-a-day, 365-day-a-year community service under a new contract funded by the City Council. The £37,000-a-year contract, £37,000-a-year contract with Chichester Care Line started on July the 1st and runs for at least 5 years. It replaces the previous in-house community alarm service, which ended in March 2015 following a funding cut by Hampshire County Council. Around 800 users of the service are City Council tenants living in sheltered housing, while about 700 are Lifeline customers, people living in other private and social housing. Councillor Caroline Horritt, Council portfolio holder for housing, said the alarm monitoring system is integral to the City Council's sheltering housing service and enables people to maintain independence within their homes. More than 13,000 calls were made between April and December 2015 from council service users, which were answered and dealt with by the Community Alarm Centre.
Mary Rose brought back to life. It has been 471 years since the sinking of the Mary Rose, and following 34 years of meticulous conservation, Henry VIII's favourite ship will be brought back to life. Visitors will see stunning panoramic views of the ship from all nine galleries through floor-to-ceiling glazing on the lower and main deck. On the upper deck, they will breathe the same air as Henry VIII's warship for the first time in 23 years, with only a balcony between them and the hull.
And that concludes our articles from the Hampshire Chronicle this week. Thank you for your readings, everyone. And before we go, another reminder that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems at all with your recording. Her number, as we've given before, is 01962 870 370. And thanks to all the support teams for their preparation and dispatch of this edition, and to our editors, Gordon and Liz, and of course, many thanks to our readers, Claire.
Bye.
Peter.
Goodbye.
And Jerry.
Bye.
And from me, Roz, until the next time, goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished it with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Thank you. We hope you have a good week, and thank you for listening.